I'm your host, Jeff Ragavan, and welcome to Alchemy, the podcast all about building a business on the front lines of the new economy. Welcome back to another episode of Alchemy. Very excited to welcome a really awesome guy, great friend, very knowledgeable on the space, David Palachuk. He's the founder and CEO at Branding Bud. David, really amazing to have you on the show finally.
Thank you. I'm glad to be on the show.
So, David, you have quite the impressive background. You've been in the industry for quite some time. You started off in the halls of the credit card industry, so spending almost a decade at MasterCard. And you know, then you were even on the agency side and working with Pepsi. You spent over 5 years at Microsoft doing some really awesome stuff with Xbox and a lot of brand partnerships. And then you were, you know, a very early start jumping into the cannabis space, and you were over at Dope Magazine going back all the way into 2012, and then were the chief brand officer at Evergreen Herbal. So you most recently were the chief brand officer at the Matters Group. So you've had such an incredible career, but you know, I'd love to just kind of kick off the show and, you know, maybe give us a little bit of a background on, like, we see a lot of brand folks who come from consumer goods, CPG, and even, you know, credit card companies, but not until really the last few years. So you've really been an early adopter. What was that kind of spark for you that made you say, yeah, you know what, I'm going to leave and go to Dope Magazine in 2012?
Well, you know, it's interesting. In 2012, the I-502 law passed here in Washington State, which was the adult use law, at the same time in Colorado. And to be honest with you, I've always been a little ahead of my time. I was skateboarding is a love of mine, and I was skateboarding back on the East Coast when skateboarding was not a thing. And I was sponsored by Vans sneakers and used to get beat up by kids in my high school for wearing these funky little sneakers that nobody knew of. So skateboarding was something that I was early to. I also owned a design gallery in New York City for many years, again, way before the average person even thought about design. And when I saw the opportunity come up for cannabis, which has always been a part of my life, I thought, I know I've always been early, but this is something I could really sink my teeth into. I could help the industry. I had a love for the plant, and I just thought it felt right. I had been in corporate for 20 plus years and never felt like I quite fit in. So really the legalization of cannabis and the passing of the I-502 law here in 2012, I took that risk, and I have, and a big loss in salary for that matter. But it's been, it's been, you know, almost 10 years. Actually it was 2011 when I jumped. So, almost 10 years. Yeah.
Well, listen, I think you've been a great player in the space. And, you know, I think myself and my colleagues and my peers out there, that you're a very recognizable household name in the cannabis space. So it's great to have you really, you know, pushing everything that we need to move forward. And it doesn't go unappreciated. But most exciting, most recently, you just launched a new book. So you had your first book out on cannabis, and it's called Branding Bud, The Commercialization of Cannabis. So one, congrats. That's awesome. And I can't wait to read it. But tell us a little bit more about the book.
Well, thank you. I never thought I'd be an author. I never thought I'd write a book. Once having entered the cannabis industry, one of the opportunities I had was to work at Dope Magazine. And during the almost 4 years that I was at Dope Magazine as the vice president of brand partnerships and licensing, which quite frankly really gave me my introduction into the industry and meeting everybody on a both a professional but also a community based level, allowed me to really engage in the community. What I did in addition to my role was I was writing a 3-page article every month in Dope Magazine called Branding Bud. And that was really about the changing brand landscape, because once things kicked in 2012, it was all about local cultivators and farms. And then as it started to get a little more mature, you know, people started to understand, hey, wait, we need to really treat our packaging and the way we approach customers more like, you know, CPG, and really start to create inspirational brands or brands that had meaning. And over the course of time, over the course of the last 10 years, that brand landscape has really changed dramatically. So it really all started off with the articles I wrote every month in Dope Magazine. And then from there, I really roll those articles up and continue to write the book. And the book took me 5 years to write. Most people say, most podcasts I've been on, when people say, wow, your book is, you have perfect timing. And I say, wait, the book took me.
It's taken you a while. Yeah.
That's right. I wrote it twice. So maybe I don't have perfect timing, but maybe I'm lucky. And along those lines, the book has been the best-selling book for 3 months on Amazon in the branding and logo design category, as well as the green business category. So again, I think it's all about timing and it's all about, being lucky. And speaking of timing, I mean, really, we've come to a place where cannabis is being normalized. People are really more accepting of it. And, we all those that either partake or consume or are in the industry can safely come out of the closet, so to speak.
Yeah. So, David, I haven't read the book yet, but a bunch of folks on my team have, and, they kind of gave me some quick excerpts, which I was going through. And one of the things that kind of stuck out to me, which I actually didn't know the answer to, so I figured this was actually a good time to bring it up to you, was, essentially in the book, you write about the 14 cannabis brand archetypes. And so, one, what exactly is a brand archetype? And, talk a little bit more about them.
First off, a brand archetype is really a marketing shortcut. It's everything about the brand, but something you understand immediately. And that could be packaging, the logo, the coloring, the name of the brand. That could be where it actually sells. That could be so many things. But a brand archetype is, let me use this as an example. If I took literally 5 seconds of country music, hip hop music, jazz music, and classical music. You would, and I gave that to you to listen, or to anybody to listen. They would immediately understand what they're listening to. They would immediately recognize it and typically have either a positive or negative response to it. And so a brand archetype is very much that. And now let me give some examples. So over the course of the last 11 or 12 years, I've been, analyzing brands and looking at brands. And what I've realized is very much like I've done in the CPG space is what type of brands are out there, and can we put them into buckets, and can we categorize them, and can we better understand their appeal? And so what I've done is I've put together a list of 14 cannabis brand archetypes that I feel for the most part cover, the entire spectrum of brands. Now that said, they are not mutually exclusive. They often overlap, and I'll give some examples as we go through that. But let me just call them out. Mm-hmm. There's a cultivator brand. There's a gender brand. There's a foodie brand. There's a health and wellness brand. There's a counterculture brand. There's a prohibition brand, nostalgic, charity, luxury, value, art and design, regional, novelty, and celebrity. And let me use one brand, which is a brand I often use, which is actually no more in existence, but Whoopi and Maya. Whoopi and Maya was a brand and a partnership started with Whoopi Goldberg. So there's a celebrity component to it. It's also focused on women and products that either appeal to women or are benefit specific for gender-based ailments, in this case, women. So it also had a charity component to it too. So the hooks, if you will, of the brand are celebrity, gender, charity, etc. And those are the things that right away either somebody is drawn to or they're not. So a feminine package might, and again, I'm speaking in stereotypes here, but a feminine package might appeal to a woman more than it would to a macho man, so to speak. And, you know, when you start to think about, well, a perfect example in you know, the real world is Black & Decker tools. You know, orange and gray, very manly, very macho. Black & Decker thought they could take their brand to the kitchen and came out with coffee makers that were, I'm sorry, I think I said black and gray, black and orange, orange and gray, and came out with a line of coffee makers that were orange and gray. And, you know, realized very quickly that this was fine in the workroom or the garage, but it wasn't, really transcending over into the kitchen, even though Black & Decker is known for, longevity and well-made products and so on and so forth. That just didn't transfer. So it's that initial look and feel that that one gets, that is really that shortcut, if you will, to say, I know what this brand is about, or, mm-hmm. or I get a sense of what this brand is about. So, you know, really back in the day when things kicked off, there were really cultivator brands and, well, really farm brands. And then from the farm brands became, I'll call them the cultivator brands, which were really the personalities that came out of it. You know, whether that be, Scherbinski or Ed Rosenthal, or, there's a whole list of well-known cultivators mm-hmm. that have their own brands.
Yeah. But, so David, I just want to interrupt you for just 1 second, because I think you're going into like a ton of amazing stuff. We only have like 20 minutes and that you have so much knowledge. I want to get a few things out to you that we have so many listeners from cannabis companies that are new, right? That have just launched a brand or been around just for maybe under a year.
Yeah.
And so from being in this space, for so long, what are some of the biggest challenges that, marketers in particular face when they're launching a new cannabis brand? And I think from you, it'd be helpful to understand, like, what are some of the biggest mistakes that can happen so that they could avoid it from listening to the show?
Yeah, well, the first thing in the first place I'll always start off with is a brand is a promise and the ability to consistently deliver on that promise. So if you're a brand owner and you're kicking off a brand or you have a brand and you have a brand ethos that has made promises or insinuated promises, if you can't live up to those, then you're off to a bad start. So that's the first thing I would say. You know, if you're a value brand, then be a value brand. If you're a luxury brand, then be that, but be what you say you are. And that's most important. Now once you've got that covered, then there's other things, in terms of your tone and messaging and focus on, if not your current customer, your target customer, and what their need states and rituals are, because that's really where you need to meet them. You need to meet your customer at their need state, at their ritual. So I think that's another thing which is really meaningful here. Again, that look and feel of your brand conveys everything that is the backstory and is the meaning and the reason for your brand. Now, when we speak about marketing, marketing is a tough conversation to have because rules change on the platforms, almost daily. Different states have different rules related to packaging, related to advertising. So that's, that's really localized. But in that statement, my advice to the brands would be, again, think local, absolutely local. I've worked with many clients that talk about their big followings on Instagram, and yet they only sell in one state. So it doesn't matter if they have 100,000 followers that are in other states. It matters how many followers they have that can actually get to the store to purchase their product. So most importantly, think locally when marketing cannabis.
Totally. Now you talk a lot about, knowing the consumer, right? So maybe you could drill in a little bit as far as, the actual difference between, cannabis consumers and how maybe brand A might be targeting someone completely different from brand B.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what's most important is to know that all cannabis consumers are not the same. And I think mm-hmm. that is finally, two myths. One, cannabis sells itself. I guess you can say it does, but now that you have competition and other savvy marketers and branders in the industry, you have to keep up. So, so those days are gone. Adding on to that, you know, the second myth is that every cannabis consumer is not the same. So I look at cannabis consumers in a model of concentric circles. And I think of these rings as, with each ring, there's a different message, a different tone. So, you know, in the center, I think of the canicore. The canicore are those folks that consume on a daily basis that maybe work in the industry and fully understand it. The second ring is the canna comfortable. Those are folks that might be our partners and might, be weekend warriors. But, you know, they feel comfortable with it. Canna casual is the next step out. Canna confused are the folks that are still asking what's the difference between THC.
Right. Yeah.
Then we have a canna neutral and a canna contra. And so when you really think about it, you know, the canna curious, which is bigger than actual cannabis consumers, are really the canna comfortable and canna casual, and perhaps the canna confused. So I always liken this conversation to we're standing around a swimming pool, and there's different folks that have different levels of swimming. You'll find one that jumps into the deep end right away. You'll find the other that's standing off to the side. You have to coax them into the pool and say, the water's warm, come into the shallow end. I've got a life preserver for you. So depending on where these consumers are, those are the types of conversations we have to have as we either educate them, inform them, or have, you know, expert conversations with them about why the products are differentiated. But knowing that and knowing who they are is really the basis for understanding how to speak to them. And so as we talk about brands and brand owners, you know, I think it's important for the brand owners to really start to think about, well, who am I appealing to? And if they don't understand that, who am I trying to appeal to is the next step. And then they need to match those consumers up and their need states and rituals with their products, meaning their form factors. So if they're trying to appeal to, I don't know, an older generation, let's call them the wisdom crowd, you know, their form factor might want to be sublingual slips or tinctures or transdermal patches as opposed to flower and vape, you know, carts. And again, these are generalizations, but, you know, I think they're safe to say that, that certain form factors appeal to, certain consumers more than others.
David, what's super exciting as you're kind of talking about all of these very specific consumer groups and, you know, products that they tend to gravitate to and who they are. A lot of the mainstream brands out there, big CPG companies, big QSR companies, they've now started to get on the bandwagon going, holy crap, we want to target those cannabis consumers because they align with our brand too. And because we now have data on it, right, people are getting very excited. So I wanted to ask you, just from your experience, at least from a, you know, one on the MasterCard side, then Microsoft, how do you feel about brands now targeting cannabis consumers to really drive more, you know, value? Kind of looking at that opportunity that they never looked at before.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, Jeff, that's a great question, and it's really insightful. And I think there's a lot of things that sort of stem from that. And in light of time, let me try to make that fast. But one of the things I think is really interesting is, so if we look at the cannabis consumer, you know, who are they and what do they do? And we're realizing that they're real people with real lives and you know, income and disposable income and so on and so forth. So now there's other folks, as you just mentioned, that are interested in them as consumers. But, you know, a bigger question too, which I love is, and I hear over and over again is, you know, the cannabis industry, what is it and what will it be? And I often think about it as industry or ingredient, right? So I believe that there'll always be a cannabis industry, and it will be either a craft industry or let's just say on the spectrum, it will be closer to the plant. But as you move away from the plant and you start to get into the isolates and distillates and water-soluble powders that go into the edibles and the beverages, you know, and even further, you're going to find cannabinoids that end up in you know, P&G's toothpastes and mouthwashes and other products that are not psychotropic. They don't get you stoned, but they have benefits of cannabinoids. So I think all of these companies, certainly the consumer product good companies, are not only looking at the consumers, who they are and what they consume and what their lifestyles are, but I think they're even looking further out, saying, you know, what cannabinoids can we use in our products that also attract these consumers? So I think there's a lot going on here. And I think, you know, there's a lot of data now to show, you know, who these consumers are, what they're interested in. Just this morning on the CBS Morning Show, Tony DeCoppoli even spoke about how his parents were, in quotes, in the business when he was growing up and how cannabis should be normalized. So, you know, and we've seen on the Stephen Colbert Show, on Ellen DeGeneres. So I think it's happening, and we cannabis consumers are a new segment and being watched just like any other segment. It's obvious. You know, I've seen this type of thing happen both at MasterCard with data on purchasing and Microsoft with all sorts of other data. You know, data is the future. Well, data is now. Better understanding data is the future. And you know, coming up with call to actions and actionable, executable programs around data is really what's key.
I love it. So Dave, before we go, because I know we're about 1 minute to go, you know, for one, where can we get your book? I know you mentioned Amazon. Is there anywhere else? And, you know, any final thoughts? You've just given so much incredible advice and knowledge today that we could probably talk for 4 hours. But before we depart, anything else that you'd like to, you know, talk about?
Sure. Well, to answer your question, you can purchase my book on most online outlets. I most often drive people to Amazon because it's just the easiest thing to do. But for those that are not friends of Amazon, there's other places they can look for it as well. I would really like to thank you, Jeff, for what you do. I think both online and in the real world, you're doing great things. I think the company is doing great things too, and much of that data, you know, should be used and will be used for doing the right thing for the industry. Most importantly, I start off with a love for the plant. I know it's going to turn and change into a real industry. I hope most people keep love for the plant, but that's. That's the most important thing. We just need to be professionals, raise the industry up, and help each other as we're doing it. And I thank you for your time, Jeff.
Awesome, David. Well, I appreciate everybody. David Palaszczuk, founder and CEO of Branding Bud. And again, thanks for all the knowledge bombs. Congrats on the book. And you know, looking forward to seeing your face pop up online.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Great to have you on, David.
This episode of the Alchemy Podcast was brought to you by Philo. Thanks for tuning in. And if you enjoyed today's show, don't forget to subscribe and share.